Welcome to This Week in Money. I'm Jim Goddard. Today, CIBC Woodgundy's Ross Clark checks the major equity markets and the big run for the Dow. Real estate consultant Ross Kay tells us by the time the BC election rolls around, British Columbians will have lost $340 billion in home equity, a drop never seen before in North America. Inc. Research CEO Ted Dixon says increasing international tensions will boost commodity prices. Plus, at the end of the show, we'll have a company showcase update with American Manganese CEO and President Larry Ray. We'll talk to Ross Clark right after this.
Abin Resources Limited is a gold exploration company with significant projects in British Columbia, Saskatchewan, and the Yukon. Trading on the TSX Venture Exchange, symbol ABN, and the pink symbol ABNAF. Surrounded by world-class gold deposits and mines, Abin's 23,000 hectares Forest Kerr Gold Project is located in the heart of the Golden Triangle in northwestern BC. For more information, visit us at abinresources.com.
Welcome to This Week in Money, the source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Ross Clark. He's an investment advisor at CIBC Woodgundy in Vancouver. Welcome back to This Week in Money, Ross.
Nice to be with you, Jim.
Boy, what a run for the Dow. 11 straight days closing at record highs. Is this going to continue?
We have to go back quite a ways to find anything like this, and it is just grinding its way up. We have to go all the way back to 1987, actually the first quarter of 1987, to find anything of this magnitude. Even though the gains are small every day, it does add up over time. And we haven't had, I think it's 53 days now without a 1% move in the market. So it's one of those ones where every pause every day is just a time for people to sit back and reload, and at the end of the day decide they want to be back in. And most of Friday was spent down 50 to 70 points in the Dow, and then closed the day with a small net gain. So I guess we're leading up to Tuesday's presentation of the Donald Trump at Congress, so we'll see how markets react from that one. Clearly, it could be a sell on the news if he doesn't have anything that really excites the marketplace.
I know Americans really are looking forward to the tax breaks he promised.
Yes, but how long will it take to get them through? I mean, the key here is all of this is a process. The market has been pricing in quite a bit since the election. You know, we're up 16% or so on the Dow since the election. That's very, very much in line with what you see in the first calendar quarter when you've got a new president and the market's already been in an uptrend. And we're still of the mindset that somewhere in the midst of a 3 to 7% correction would be very, very healthy at this point for the market. You know, on the Canadian side of the equation, things got very, very heated this week. The banks, most have come out with their earnings, and they're just blowing out the expectations. You're seeing increases in dividends by as much as 5%. There's share buybacks that are being announced. So by the time we got to Friday and Royal Bank came around with its announcement, the market pretty much had factored everything in, and we took a bit of a haircut at the tail end of the day. So maybe the Canadian market is starting to set up for its correction.
Is it rather amazing that 55% of the TSE profits are from six big banks?
Well, they've made a point of taking money to the bottom line, whether it's fees or whether it's in the trading that they've been doing. Other than Commerce, the others have made good forays into the U.S., and they're seeing lots of profitability from that side of the equation.
What's going on with oil?
Oil continues to hold its very, very steadily up here. We're in this $53.5 to $54.5 range. The commitment of traders numbers, which we continue to monitor, are very high, speculative long positions, and that's from individuals as well as the various funds. They continue to stay high. It's actually reminiscent of what we saw a year ago in the gold market. Gold had made that punch up to 1250, very high COT numbers at that point. We sat around for 2 months holding about $1,200 on gold, and then it made one final surge into the summer. It was about a 20% pop in the numbers there. The oil market's got that same feel to it. It just doesn't want to crack that $51 support. So I think if you push through 55, you might see a bit of a run, and that would be classic action, sort of ending action, as far as the oil run is concerned from a year ago. You know, it's pushing 13 months now since oil had been down under $30, and the normal run is in that 13 to 15 month window.
And we might see gasoline prices rise because springtime is when they shut down refineries to retool to build or make summer gasoline.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, and the maybe and we'll be talking about inflation like they did here on the end of this week. The Canadian inflation rate, 2.1%. But a big part of that is just because gasoline prices are up so much from a year ago. So, you know, they're getting a core inflation rate in Canada of about 1.6%, which is really what you want to see. You want to see some growth. You want to see a bit of inflation. We don't want to have a stagnant economy, and maybe this is a decent sign.
Ross, thank you so much for being on This Week in Money.
Pleasure to be with you, Jim.
My guest has been Ross Clark, investment advisor at CIBC Wood Gundy in Vancouver. Coming up, Ross Kay next on This Week in Money.
Always consult your investment professional before making any investment decision.
I'm Larry Ray, President and CEO of American Manganese, Inc., listed on the TSX Venture, ticker symbol AMY, A-M-Y, with proprietary patents in the U.S., China, and South Africa. Our focus is on recycling lithium-ion batteries for electric vehicles. China recently legislated the responsibility for recycling onto their electric vehicle manufacturers and importers. For more information, please visit AmericanManganeseInc.com or phone me, Larry Ray, at 778-574-4444.
Keep informed. Receive our weekly recap of thought-provoking articles, podcasts, and radio delivered to your inbox for free. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage, HowStreet.com.
This Week in Money is archived online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com.
My guest is real estate consultant Ross Kay from TheWealthyHomeowner.ca. Welcome back to This Week in Money, Ross.
And thanks for having me back, Jim.
The latest Canadian and BC real estate numbers are out. Your thoughts on those numbers? I guess it depends who's releasing them and what they're saying about them.
My thoughts. Now, remember, you said my thoughts on the numbers. You didn't ask me what the numbers were. My thoughts are is that, once again, the organized real estate in Canada has blatantly come out and misled the entire population of the country with their news release earlier or last week. Certainly the Canadian Real Estate Association failed to tell everybody in Canada that the average selling price or the average purchase price being paid for a home in Canada during the month of January increased by a staggering $26 over what was being paid in December. $26. Your listeners won't hear this stat anywhere else, and everybody will be shaking their head, and most people probably won't even believe what I just said. This is a fact. The average purchase price paid for a house in Canada during the month of January 2017 was a total of $26 more than it was the month before. Yet you read in the newspapers across Canada of 12% increases, housing prices going crazy, everything else. Although the Canadian Real Estate Association did try to moderate themselves because they realize now that they've been caught deceiving the public now for 3 years in a row through faulty housing stats. The fact of the matter is you did not hear anywhere in Canada that prices had only increased $26. And then we look to British Columbia. And I'm going to express something to you about British Columbia that is very problematic for your province. especially on the day this is being recorded today, the same day that the BC government is bringing down their latest budget. The budget is going to include a projection for land transfer tax, real estate related GDP, taxation caused by the trading of homes in your province, estimates of spending patterns that British Columbians have followed that has relied almost exclusively on house price gains, and all of those projections in today's forecast will be wrong. They were wrong on the day that they're issued because the British Columbia government uses faulty housing data to determine their budget. The Minister of Finance of British Columbia, his department, and everyone else associated, every single economist working for them, uses faulty housing statistics that they believe to be data. Let me explain to you the magnitude of what I'm talking about today. In the month of January, the market capitalization of the home ownership stock in the province of British Columbia dropped $32 billion. That's correct. $32 billion in 30 days. Now, I don't know if the Toronto Stock Exchange has ever dropped $30 billion in market capitalization in 30 days under any time except when maybe the Great Recession or Black Monday. I don't. You'll have to ask one of your other show guests that are more skilled in this area of the economy than I am, or about the stock market, anyways, to pass judgment on that. But I encourage you to ask them when's the last time they remembered a $32 billion drop in market capitalization. That $32 billion drop is just a precursor for future drops that have already been recorded in real estate transactional data. We know that as of today, British Columbians will have recorded a $230 billion drop in their net worth. Because by the time April, May rolls out, the market capitalization of the British Columbia home ownership stock, which I believe my firm is the only firm that actually calculates such a number, will have dropped $230 billion on that, when those stats finally arrive. That drop in net worth has already taken place. You're just waiting now to hear about it because your housing data is so far delayed because of the real estate boards. You will see this actually, Jim, in your updated market assessments that will be done on properties in British Columbia with a July 1st date of when they're calculated in 2017. We are estimating right now the current market cap of British Columbia real estate will have dropped about $340 billion by the time the 2017 property tax assessments are completed. That drop is of a magnitude that I do not believe has ever taken place in any province in Canada, including Ontario, during the Great House Price Correction of the 1990s. This drop you folks have just undergone is going to cause repercussions across your economy that today's budget will not even address. As the politicians are going to the polls to get elected, the reality of this net worth devastation in your province is going to hit home. What's tragic is, had people simply been told the truth, had homeowners in your province simply availed themselves of available strategies to avoid some of this loss, well, I know with our own programs, about $200 billion of net worth could have been saved. The people who did not participate in taking the actions involved in those strategies right now, we cannot help. The loss that you have fallen under is over. It's going to be reported in the next few months, but that is over. We cannot help you now from that loss. Can we help you from future losses? Yes. But as of today's date, we're looking at a minimum $230 billion net worth drop in British Columbia. And we know that that's headed towards the $320 to $340 billion loss to be recorded by July.
What's the latest on Kelowna and Okanagan real estate?
Well, I mean, there's a bit of a sadness on my part here because over a while, I know this may possibly be your last show in to be broadcast in that area. And as it happens to be, as I had forecasted on this show repeatedly over and over again, it takes a while for the outside markets away from the prime market, which in British Columbia is Vancouver, for those markets to begin to recording the fall in house prices. And you saw in the Okanagan this in January, the probably about the third set of signs that we monitor when we know that your prices are going negative. So your sales barely stayed ahead of the pace that they were on in the fall of 2016, but at the same time, your selling price actually took a dive in the Okanagan area. Now, the real estate boards will still be reporting this as a positive because they reported on a year-over-year comparison. We don't look at it that way. We look at the last quarter of 2016, and we begin looking at your 2017 numbers. When we look at that, we see it's a negative price has taken place already. Now, you're probably going to ask me what I'm talking about here. So in 2016, up till the month of December, or excuse me, the end of November, the average selling price in the Okanagan Mainland Real Estate Board was $462,000. What it was in the month of January was $440,000. So you see that we have already recorded a drop of $22,000 right now in the Okanagan Mainland Real Estate Board. That equates to about a 5% decrease in property values. At the same time, the local real estate board is claiming a 15% increase. Again, you can listen to the local real estate board. You can listen to us. Take your pick. All of our data is recorded here on Howe Street, on the archives that you guys have on the web. Every single comment that I make, you can go back and check and see if I told the truth or if I misled your listeners. I think you're going to find universally every single comment, forecast, prediction that we have made on this show in the last year and a half has come true.
We're speaking with real estate consultant Ross Kay from thewealthyhomeowner.ca. Ross, did the Vancouver real estate market just have a blip higher?
I think what you're referring to is the first week of February. So here is the value. Here is the real value of having accurate data instead of fake statistics. Statistics are what is released by organized real estate. They use the word statistics specifically in every single press release they create to ensure they have an out. Here is what the data told me. What the data told me was, for some strange reason, in the last 5 days of January, the selling prices of homes reported on the Real Estate Board of Greater Vancouver dropped below $950,000. What that allowed to take place was, during the month of January, a drop in sales price in the greater Vancouver area of 18.9% year over year for January took place. The members of the Real Estate Board of Greater Vancouver got to take that hit during the slowest news month of the year for real estate prices. Now, what was extremely strange, the only time I have ever watched or witnessed or reviewed real estate data where this kind of a event took place was in the first 5 days of February versus the last 5 days of January 2017 in the Real Estate Board of Greater Vancouver, where the average sale price increased 15%, 15% between each of those five-day periods. That has never, ever taken place in any data released from organized real estate, as far as I know, since 1990. What that means is, in my opinion, someone at the Real Estate Board of Greater Vancouver, or through sheer coincidence, the sale price of lower priced homes got reported by the Real Estate Board of Greater Vancouver during the month of January, while $1 million sales got reported in the first 5 days of February. What that means is the average selling price drop that will be recorded in February will not be as great as the drop that was recorded in January, providing the hucksters from the Real Estate Board of Greater Vancouver the opportunity to claim things aren't really as bad as what last month's numbers meant. What someone needs to do is to challenge this sheer data point. There were actually an exact 1,200 sales take place in the 11 days between the 11 reporting days of the last 6 days in January and the first 5 days in February on the Real Estate Board of Greater Vancouver. 1,200. Amazingly, 600 of those sales were reported in the last 6 days of January and another 600 in the first 5 days of February. The jump in price between those two sets of days was 15%. Someone needs to question the Real Estate Board of Greater Vancouver on how or which sales got reported when. You have to understand, because they quote statistics and their statistic definition on sales counts uses the word reported to the Real Estate Board of Greater Vancouver, they can actually say, oh, this sale got reported in the first 5 days of February, and this sale got reported in the days before at the end of January. Now, what I know is that you can't have a sale close 3 days later in February and for that sale to get reported back the previous month, because the Real Estate Board of Greater Vancouver goes live on the 2nd of February this year. So what that means is that the only way that number of sales increase, a 15% average selling price increase, could happen was that if sales of $1 million properties that took place in the last days of the month of January somehow didn't get reported until the first days of February. Somehow that happened. I will leave it to the Real Estate Board of Greater Vancouver to explain that phenomenon to the British Columbia public. I will put that on them to explain.
Ross, do you have any numbers for Vancouver Island?
Well, your Vancouver Island is correcting as well. So not only are you seeing a drop in sales volume, you're also seeing a drop in price. Again, you're not going to hear that being released from organized real estate, but Vancouver Island actually had its January price price for 2016 was exactly the same. In other words, there was no increase in price, so prices are already correcting because your sales volumes are dropping at the same time. So yes, Vancouver Island, a peripheral market of the greater Vancouver, is now recording the shockwaves of dropping housing prices in greater Vancouver.
Is the Toronto market still a seller's market like the Vancouver market was a year ago?
Again, I'll go back to our previous show, Jim, where I explained to everybody the seller and buyer market myth. There is no statistical or data available anywhere in the world where you can use new sales to listings ratio, new listings to sales ratio, active listings to sales ratio. There is no data recorded anywhere by any academia where the buyers and sellers markets are defined using those measures. Although those are the only measures that the organized real estate and CMHC uses to try to tell everybody what the buyers and the sellers market. The Toronto market is currently a buy, list, sell market, which is the same condition that the Greater Vancouver market was in before that market corrected. What that means is people were so overly confident in their ability to sell their own home that they weren't worried about selling it. They're going out and buying their new home first, then listing their own home for sale, and then having their old home sell, which is normally the most dangerous market that you could ever imagine being in, as those people who were caught in Greater Vancouver found out. Normally a market goes list, sell, buy, where you list your property, your current property for sale, you sell it, and then after you're sure of how much money you're going to get, you go out and buy your next one. That's what keeps house price pressures in check. What happens in a buy, list, sell market, your house price pressures get out of check. There's no checks and balances no longer apply, and you get this rapid house price appreciation during these markets. The same thing that is happening in Toronto right now that happened in Vancouver. And odds are, as a matter of fact, it looks like right now that somewhere this fall, the average selling price in the province of Ontario and the average selling price in the province of British Columbia will actually equal one another for the first time in decades.
Is that something people in Toronto should be worried about?
Well, people in Toronto, to be worried about it is an understatement. We've got politicians refusing in this part of Canada to even admit that there's a housing bubble. John Tory, the mayor of Toronto, actually came out publicly and told everybody that they're not in a housing bubble. Now, can you imagine John Tory walking out and saying Apple shares are currently undervalued and that everybody should go out and buy them, or that Tim Hortons stock is overvalued and that everybody could sell it? Of course you'd never hear anything as ridiculous as that come out of a politician's mouth. Yet, on the single largest asset class in Canada, the single largest asset class, it dwarfs the TSX total market cap, the Canadian homeownership housing stock market cap does. Politicians, economists, people who have no idea how a housing market functions, believe that they can go on national television, national radio, give everybody investment advice when it comes to the single largest asset they'll ever purchase. Something they would never considering doing about a $2 stock. But with a multi-hundred-thousand-dollar property, they feel qualified to make these comments. And this is why, folks, you are in the problem that you're in. People who have no understanding of how a housing market functions, giving investment advice to over 11 million homeowners in Canada.
Does BC Premier Christy Clark have anything to brag about with a $340 billion loss in real estate going into the provincial election in May?
Oh, she's going to have her hands full, because this is all going to come home to roost, Jim. This is not going to be nice. You know, I'm on this show here trying to help people, trying to save them from making mistakes. Look, as I've said on the show hundreds of times, I am an advocate for home ownership. I know how proactive home ownership is a life-altering event financially for people. But you have to approach it from a logical, rational, financial point of view. The consequence of my knowledge in this specific area is that I know what's going to happen in British Columbia. You cannot remove $340 billion of net worth. This is net worth we're talking about, from British Columbians' pockets and not expect major, major consequences to roll home, to hit home. I encourage you on any show that you have with some, with an economist who knows about the economy, Jim, to ask them what the consequence of a $320 to $340 billion loss in net worth of British Columbians will cause on your property. There is no money available to renovate homes. So your renovation business will start to dry out. There is no money to run out and buy houses that are priced over $800,000 that are being newly constructed. So that market will dry up. There will be no money coming in, or far less money coming in, for land transfer tax, GST, or provincial sales tax. There will be no money available to leverage from your home to purchase cars. It is a staggering consequence when you see this kind of a drop in net worth of a population take place. It is not pretty. And on top of that, all of the banks that have been lending money on false loan-to-value ratios that naturally are created in the Terranet National Bank House Price Index or the Real Estate Board of Greater Vancouver House Price Index benchmark price, those banks and lenders have all been caught. If you currently have money in a private lender who is lending mortgage loans, please take a moment to contact that lender and find out if the money that you've given them that is now currently owed as a mortgage or a second mortgage by someone else being held, they've used your money to buy a house. Please check and see that those loan-to-value ratios are not above 50%. If they're above 50% rate as of today's date, based on the way that they're calculated, that means you're in trouble. I encourage all of your listeners to make that phone call.
What does this mean for people who went out and got home equity loans?
Well, for the people themselves, it really makes no difference. The people themselves who did it, as long as you make your payment, you're okay. Now, where you're going to get into problems is if this period of house price correction in Vancouver lasts the length of time that it normally takes it to get fixed. Now, what I mean by that is that anybody who borrowed money in the last 2 years on their current home's value, and if those loans that you borrowed, the HELOCs or second loans that you placed on the property, if those loans took place at anything less than a 70% loan-to-value ratio, in other words, it was 71% loan-to-value, it was 80% loan-to-value, you are going to be in major problem when that mortgage or second mortgage or HELOC comes up for renewal. What your listeners are not aware of is the rule changes made by the Minister of Finance last year under the direction of the Office of Superintendent of Financial Institutions in Canada. The rule changes that took place really come into play in terms of harming the consumer in a market where the house prices are correcting. Because not only are the banks going to assume greater and greater control over your life, not only are they going to be able to slowly increase their interest rates, which they've already done, by the way, your listeners should be aware, 0.42%. Your interest rates right now have gone up 0.42% since November of last year. On renewals, this is where they get you. So imagine, you're already at a half a point greater. Imagine how easy it's going to be a couple months from now to see that increase 1.5 points. At the same time, when banks are looking to get profits because they're no longer lending new mortgages out because the housing market has slowed down, where are the banks going to seek to gain those profits? They're going to simply go to their current mortgage base when it comes up for renewal and reap that profit by charging you a higher interest rate. The CMHC rule changes that took place basically ensured that was happening. And this has really gone unreported across Canada. We sent out a warning to all members of the wealthy homeowner that you needed to take care of this late last fall, because this is coming. So our clients in Vancouver who move forward, they are protecting themselves. People in Ontario, they thought they had a little bit more time. You need to be proactive with any outstanding debt that you owe that is secured against your property. Get professional, independent advice. Contact a financial advisor, an accountant, or a strategist like ourselves. Do not listen to the bank, mortgage brokers, or anyone associated with the real estate industry in any way. You need an independent review of what's going on, because it's going to save you thousands or tens of thousands of dollars.
Ross, thank you so much for being on This Week in Money.
Thanks a lot, Jim. It was really nice for you to have me back.
My guest has been real estate consultant Ross Kay from thewealthyhomeowner.ca.
Coming up, Ted Dixon next on This Week in Money.
Gem International is a new diamond explorer in the richest diamond producing country in Africa, located next to the fourth largest producing diamond mine in the world. International Spotlight is on an 1109 carat diamond recently discovered in Africa by a fellow Canadian junior. With a proven operator and finance team, Gem International trades on the TSX Venture Exchange, symbol GI. Visit us at gemdiamondmining.com.
Keep informed. Receive our weekly recap of thought-provoking articles, podcasts, and radio delivered to your inbox for free. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage, HowStreet.com.
This Week in Money is archived online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com.
Welcome back to This Week in Money. I'm Jim Goddard. We're speaking with Ted Dixon. He's the CEO and co-founder of InkResearch.ca, Canada's first online financial news and research service, providing insider news and knowledge to investors. His website, CanadianInsider.com. Welcome back to This Week in Money, Ted.
Oh, it's great to be back, Jim.
So what are insiders sniffing around and finding these days?
Well, it's a theme that we've been talking about for some time, and that is insiders are gearing towards a revival of inflation in the economy, and people have been on the outlook for a rising inflation for a long time. And you know, when you hear the Bank of Canada talk about it, they're talking about sort of the official consumer price index. You know, will it hit 2% annualized inflation? And you know, Jim, it's only like, I think it's 1.6, and we're going to get the numbers out after this broadcast on Friday. That will, I think, update where we're at, but you know, it'll be somewhere probably between 1.5 and 2%. But what insiders are signaling is there's a lot more going on under the surface than what really the official numbers and the central banks are telling you. And it involves commodities. And so there's been a lot of skepticism about, you know, is a global economy, does it have momentum, and, you know, can recent growth we've seen out of China and the optimism surrounding the Trump victory, can it persist? Well, what insiders seem to be signaling to us, Canadian insiders, in any event, is that the inflation can persist. And when you think of it, there's really three reasons why this might be happening. First of all, we've had years and years of central bank easing, like a decade now, basically, of ultra easing, okay? And for now, it's all gone into real estate and U.S. stocks and, you know, some other stock markets around the world and art and, you know, this hot money that's been promoted by the central banks. It's kind of moved around, but it seems to be moving a little bit now into commodity prices. And that brings us to another, you know, fact behind, what might be driving this, and that is, you know, you do have some slowdown in capital investment in the resource industry as a result of commodities pulling back in after 2011 and then the oil price pullback in 2014. So you had some supply restrictions in some commodities. You know, oil's ramped up faster than a lot have, but
there are some supply pressures. And then you've got what I would call, Jim, the geopolitical backdrop. And this doesn't get a lot of attention, but it's something one has to keep in mind. And that is Donald Trump, you love him or you hate him, he's shaking things up globally, for good or for bad. But the fact of the matter is you're going to have more tension between the great powers. And I mean the great powers, I'm talking about the U.S., China, Germany, the EU, per se, and Russia, military powers, or those that have the potential to be to flex a military might. And when you have these kind of tensions, you're likely to get a bit of a arms race developing. And, even Donald Trump has been pushing the Europeans to add to their defense spending. They're pushing, Canada's being facing some pressure to up defense spending. And I can tell you there's a mini naval arms race going on between China and Japan right now as we speak. And, those types of backdrops tend to be supportive of commodities. Not necessarily a great backdrop for global growth, but for the Canadian stock market, if we can keep this inflation momentum going globally, then Canadian resource stocks should do all right. Now, one can sit back and say, well, that doesn't sound great for the economy in general if resource stocks are rising for really the wrong reasons, and that is inflation. But, that's really a discussion for the world leaders to talk about, because they're the ones who have kind of stick-handled the situation into this corner where, we've had tons of monetary easing for almost a decade, we've got rising geopolitical tensions, and we've had these unintended consequences of low rates pushing money into some pretty unproductive and speculative areas, such as real estate in Canada, and leaving the real economy a bit shortchanged in certain areas. Now, when we say insiders are signaling this, where do we get this from? Well, we get it from a couple of metrics that we follow. First, we look at our semi-annual rebalancing of the Canadian Cider Index. This is an index that we publish in real time. You can track it on CanadianCider.com. And it's 50 stocks that have good growth or value characteristics on the Toronto Stock Exchange that insiders prefer. We rebalance it twice a year. And in November, we saw a tilt towards Alberta-type stocks that are leverage the Alberta economy, to the mining industry, and to companies that service those industries. So we saw a real tilt in that. We're also seeing a continued persistent bullish indications from our sentiment indicators in the energy and the materials area. And when we do our top 40 every month, which we distribute to our Inc. subscribers and Canadian Insider Club subscribers on CanadianInsider.com, we continue to see a lot of opportunity in both the mining and the energy sector, and they're taking quite a chunk of the sort of stock specific situations. And I'll give you one kind of sort of final real life example of what might be going on here, and that is last week Air Canada, which is in the Canadian Insider Index, along with a number of energy companies, I might add, reported their 2016 results, but they warned about a potential profit squeeze this year because energy prices, fuel prices are going up. And what you're getting here is inflation at the company level, okay? So these commodity prices are going up, they're squeezing profits. You're going to see this more and more in the United States. We continue to see the U.S. market flying here. It, has a lot of people, including myself, scratching our heads. Our U.S. insider indicators are very low. U.S. insiders do not share the general optimism of the Trump rally. Yes, there are pockets of opportunity in the U.S. market. There are, it's a huge market. And so there are some opportunities there in terms of value. But in general, I think the theme for the first half of this year is watch out for profit squeezes among industrial companies like Air Canada, and on pullbacks on these resource companies, because they're very volatile, it may provide buying opportunities unless it becomes certain that we're heading back to a deflationary environment. And with all the monetary easing and no signs of any sort of debt restructuring. When I mean debt restructuring, debt discipline in the United States or really any other major economy, the mix is there for continued inflationary forces.
Will the Canadian government have to drop corporate taxes to remain competitive with the U.S. if Trump follows through with his promise to drop corporate taxes?
Well, let's see what the U.S. does. I mean, it's all speculation right now, and I think that's one reason why the U.S. market is flying. So far in 2017, small cap stocks in the United States have actually lagged. So this sort of upsets the narrative we had just a few weeks ago that the U.S. economy is going to be booming on optimism and the domestic economy is going to be doing great, and that's why small cap stocks are doing so well. Well, small cap stocks aren't doing so well in the United States, but large cap stocks like Apple are. Well, who will be a big beneficiary if there's a big tax change in the U.S.? Potentially Apple and companies like Apple with their money sitting offshore. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to improve the competitiveness of the overall U.S. tax system. We're going to have to wait and see. The Canadian government should hold some dry powder to undertake its own tax reform. I mean, those who have been following our discussions, Jim, for the past year know that I've been banging the drum on tax reform in Canada. We had a BC budget come out this week. You know, no real discussion of tax reform. Hopefully in the election, either the BC Liberals or the BC NDP, and I'm certainly not holding my breath for the BC NDP, but it would be nice if at least one of the parties, even if it's the Green Party, would talk about tax reform seriously to make BC more competitive, and then maybe it would force the federal government to start thinking about things like that. So we can hope that there's some good proposals coming from the United States. Just we're all waiting, and so far it's all talk and no substance. I can't help but think though that when we finally get the numbers, that we'll be a bit disappointed.
The Conference Board of Canada is predicting Alberta will lead the growth in the Canadian economy this year. You agree?
Well, we've been talking about that for some time, and in the rebalancing of the Canadian Insider Index, that's exactly what we saw. We saw a rebalancing to Alberta companies and those companies that service Alberta. Like, there's I'm not going to get into stock names, but you can go to our website at index.incresearch.com and look at our presentation for the November rebalancing, and you'll see the companies that have gone into the index and that have stayed in the index, and a lot of them are retail names that will benefit from a pickup in retail activity in Alberta. So Canadian insiders have been signaling that Alberta is going to be coming back in terms of leading the country, and that's not going to make a lot of environmentalists happy, it is what it is. And we're moving into an environment, Jim, where geopolitical tensions are rising and countries are not going to want to be caught short on resources, whether it's minerals or whether it's oil and gas. We hear a lot about building oil inventories. Well, I'm not so sure China or the United States want to be caught short of any of these key commodities, just in case things get a little dicey. And the probability of a geopolitical flare-up, also known as a war, in less polite language, is low. It's very low, but it's not zero. And you just never know when something could flare up out of control, especially when you have a Twitter trigger happy president who we'll have to see if he's able to kind of do his 4 years here without setting off any major incidents. We all hope so, but it's not a zero risk that everything's going to go smoothly. That's for sure. So why get caught short on key commodities if you may need them in a sort of a confrontational situation?
Ted, thanks for being on This Week in Money.
My pleasure, Jim.
My guest has been Ted Dixon, CEO and co-founder of InkResearch.ca. His website, CanadianInsider.com. That wraps up our show for this week. We'd like to thank our guests, Ross Clark, Ross Kay, and Ted Dixon. And thank you for listening. Stand by for our company showcase update with Larry Ray. I'm Jim Goddard. We'll be back next week with more This Week in Money.
Comments made on This Week in Money are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any manner whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Archived online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. This Week in Money is a production of How Street Media Incorporated. Executive producer is Tom Allen. Welcome to Company Showcase, an advertising feature on HowStreet.com.
We're chatting with Larry Ray, CEO and President of American Manganese. Welcome back.
Well, thanks for inviting me back, Jim, and I'm always happy to be on the show.
Larry, we're chatting on February 24th, and you're pretty excited. You put out a news release today. What did that news release tell us?
Well, that news release, it actually says that we were invited. And what invited means, this is our second conference we've been invited to, is that we have to actually vet our process through some of the peers in the committee, before they'll approve us presenting. But we've been invited to present at the Cobalt Development Institute's 24th annual Cobalt Conference. And so that's a big feather in our cap. We're being recognized out there as a potential significant producer of cobalt. Now, as we go through this, you look at some of the statistics that are on the institute itself, and they represent roughly, Jim, about 45,000 tons of the 100,000 tons per year production of refined cobalt. That means it's not necessarily all production from mines, it's production from scraps of slag and the refining capacities. And believe it or not, almost the other half of that is all done by China. They're the big, I guess you call it the tiger in the room, and they have control of over half of the refined cobalt in the world. So when we go there, we expect to see companies like Glencore and Vale and all the big nickel producers, all of the ones that take scrap and produce cobalt, the buyers, the sellers. It's a great prestigious event for us. And what does that mean for us? Well, since the last time I did anything on cobalt, when I talked about the value in a Model S Tesla car, it was around $16.80 a pound. Now it's at $22 a pound. That's a significant increase in roughly 1 month. So, you know, they're looking at, instead of $37,000 a ton for cobalt, we're looking at $48,000 a ton. And who is creating this shortage? Jim, the cobalt supply has turned into a deficit as early as 2014. So we're going to meet the crunch here pretty soon when it comes to cobalt. Now, not only is the cobalt being used up by, new entries like the lithium-ion battery, but now you've got the hedge funds that are stocking up on cobalt supply. So that skews the fundamentals of it a bit. You can't really sit down and say, when is the crunch going to happen? When is the price going to spike? But spike it will. And it's just great to know that for our shareholders to be involved in a company that could be a significant producer of cobalt in a short period of time. Now, there is a company in the United States that's going to be a producer of cobalt somewhere out in the future once they get a financing and they build the mine. I believe they have their permits and everything, but that could be as early as 2.5 years and as late as 4 years away, and that would be somewhat our timeline. So this is a significant event to be going to, and I couldn't be more excited, Jim.
Yes, also cobalt's pretty exciting right now because supplies are being squeezed by the war going on in the Congo, so they need to find new sources, and your company would be one of those, wouldn't it?
Well, we will benefit from that for sure. We can eventually take up the slack, not immediately, but it shows that we should be counted as a, if you want to call us a producer, but certainly a supplier of cobalt sometime in the future, at least as close as any new mine startup, and closer than most. So I don't think that's been figured into the equation yet. Certainly institutes like the Cobalt Institute and NatVat know that we are an advanced project, and they are, you know, wanting their members to be become aware of us, and so that's where we're sitting right now.
Larry, if someone was interested in your company, where does it trade?
It trades on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol AMY, AMY, and it trades down the U.S. under the symbol AMY, ZF, and it trades on the Frankfurt Exchange under the symbol 2AM. And they can reach us at, or go to the company site at AmericanManganeseInc.com, or they can email me direct at LREAUGH at AMY, Amy, MN, Mother Norman, .com, or phone me at 778-574-4444.
Larry, thanks for the update.
You're welcome.
We've been speaking with Larry Ray, CEO and President of American Manganese, on February 24th. I'm Jim Goddard.
Comments made on Company Showcase are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any manner whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Archived online at HowStreet.com. Company Showcase is a production of How Street Media Incorporated.